Well, I am delighted to be here in the office of Professor Dimpton Devine in UCD this afternoon as her guest, and she is going to be my guest here on the podcast today, so thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, good to be involved.
Yeah, well, I'll give a little bit of background, if that's okay, Dimpton, about your work and what you've been working on for since you began your career as an academic. So currently you're the head of School of Education here at UCD. You're also the director of of the PhD in Children and Youth Studies, and you are also one of the founding members of the UCD Childhood and Human Development Research Centre. You're a sociologist by trade, and you have a particular interest in children and young people's rights, identities, particularly in education and well-being. And you're influenced by a critical social justice perspective. So you see education as a key site in the production and the reproduction of children's identities. Not only that, I mean, it's fair to say, and I'm sure you'll be very modest about this, but your work is internationally recognised. You've held a Marie Curie Fellowship, you're a Fulbright Scholar, and you are on I don't know how many advisory boards and committees. So I'm absolutely delighted. Thank you very much for giving up your time and agreeing to speak about Paulo Freire today.
Yeah, delighted, because Paulo Freire has been very much at the foundation of my own work. I mean, in my past history, I was also a teacher, a primary school teacher, and I did my original PhD, actually, was looking at how children experience their primary schooling and looking at that whole area of children's voice in education. So the foundation of a lot of that actually have come from my own original undergraduate studies in education and coming across Paulo Freire at that time, and particularly his seminal text on Pedagogy of the Oppressed. And that absolutely spoke to me, and really he has been a foundational scholar for a lot of the work that I've done subsequently, very much trying to highlight the importance of listening to children and young people, hearing their voices on their experiences. My focus is particularly on education, although I've broadened that a bit to really a lot of different aspects of children's lives, and that's really central, that idea of voice, participation and power are central actually to the work of Freire.
And the interesting thing, I suppose, about Freire's work is, I mean, a lot of his theory and practice was born of his own personal experience. I mean, he was a Brazilian educator and philosopher who unfortunately passed away in 1997. But his theoretical contribution had such a global impact for people like yourselves. I mean, the reach from Brazil to Ireland and around the world. He ended up as a professor in Harvard. He was invited to teach there before he was eventually able to return to Brazil. But his story, his own story, is quite unique, really, isn't it? You know, he came from quite a middle-class background, but then due to the economic crisis and the depression of the 1930s, his own family experienced poverty. And it was that experience of poverty and the knock-on effect that that had on his education which led him to kind of look at the relationship between social class and education, because he said that he just couldn't. He literally just couldn't be educated while he was hungry and while his mind was on other matters and that were related to poverty as such. But that's not that. It's not just poor people or people from a certain social class that he represents within his work. When he's talking about young people within education, he's talking about the whole spectrum of education and the structure of it as such, and that the balance of power is what he looks at.
There's a few things there that you said, Gráinne, that are relevant to understanding his focus on education that are actually very important. The first is the fact that he was middle class himself, even though he experienced poverty, meant that he had an appreciation of the power of education. And what he wanted to do was not only to access education, knowing the value of education, so he knew the value of education and he knew the power of it, but he also recognised the poverty that arises when people don't have an opportunity to experience education the way it should be experienced. So for me, working within the field of education, what's particularly valuable about what he did was he highlighted the relevance of education to the kind of society that we want to live in. So when we talk about pedagogy of the oppressed, I mean, as an educator, I would say that pedagogy is absolutely foundational to what happens within education. It's how you actually communicate that very intimate relationship between the teacher and the student. That is where the freedom arises. And he had a very deep appreciation of that, because he brought with him from his middle class background an appreciation of the value of education and the entitlement to education to those who maybe saw education as something that wasn't directly relevant to their lives and that education was something that was there for the elites. He made that really, really important connection between your foundational experiences of learning, which is a personal journey for you in terms of how you see yourself in the world. And he made that very important connection between that and the kind of society that we want to live in.
Yes.
So for him, education is never neutral. Education is actually a key platform for bringing about social and political change.
And he saw education very much as a political arena.
100%.
And the relationship particularly of the teacher and the student as being quite a political. And he kind of, in that book that you spoke about, The Pedagogy of the Oppressed, he presents a new, I mean, he basically kind of looked very critically at what was happening, the way that education was structured and what was happening there, and presented a new possibilities there.
Yeah, and what he's doing is he's questioning maybe the traditional view of the purpose of education. So typically there might be consideration that education is about getting qualifications. And what he was saying was it's much more fundamental than that. It's actually about framing and informing how you see yourself as a person. And that if you can be educated in a way that empowers you, that actually has huge consequences for what you see as possible for yourself and what you see as possible for the society. And that's actually really, really a very important distinction, because we can often, when we only focus on education in terms of its value for giving points, for example, in the Leaving Certificate, if that becomes the end goal, then education then is all about a particular product that you're going to get out of it, that you as one individual can use to further your position or your status in society. Freire was very much about the social good of education, that education is a public good, and that it is about the journey that you go on with your teacher, but with your peers, bringing each other towards a point of self-awareness and, importantly, criticality.
Being able to look at the reality and strip away the surface of it and see what the structure is underneath.
See what's actually happening to you in your life. And of course, he was talking about, he was working with peasants who saw education as something that wasn't relevant to their lives. Education was for the elites. And through the method, the dialogical method, which he emphasised, he was about showing them actually and working with them on their real life problems and bringing them to a position where they could critically reflect on their particular role as peasants, the impact of poverty on their lives, but importantly, how there are alternatives. But they have to be part of that shared story.
And they had to see themselves as the oppressed. They had to recognise their position as the powerless in society. So you mentioned dialogical process. So can you talk a little bit more about that? Because he talks about, as we mentioned at the beginning, the relationship, the importance of the relationship between student and teacher. And I think the culture circles that he kind of was the forerunner of bringing across Brazil, really thousands of these culture circles sprung up. And they were really good examples of that dialogue in teaching that.
So you can imagine that is moving away completely from the idea of the teacher as expert and the student as somebody who's devoid of knowledge or understanding. So the very idea of putting people together in a circle rather than a traditional hierarchical arrangement of a classroom or a learning space, which is the teacher or the lecturer at the top of the class telling the students what they should do. It's around we're all equal here, we're all sitting around in a circle. So it's more conducive to people sharing what their actual experiences are. So the teacher-student relationship is not an authoritarian one, it's actually one where they are equal.
And there's an exchange of
knowledge. And there's an exchange of knowledge, and that the teacher is learning as much as the students are from that point of inquiry.
Yes.
There's a particular quote here, I think, actually, when I was just thinking about this discussion that I think is worth sharing around that. And it's a quote from a publication that he had in 1990. And he says, "Education for liberation is the task of those who know that they know little in dialogue with those who almost always think they know nothing." So in that dialogical method and that notion of pedagogy of the oppressed has messages for students, but also has messages for teachers who in a way need to also perceive themselves as students.
Yes, have to remember that they're not the be-all, end-all when it comes to power.
Yeah.
And he talked about that dehumanising, that the current status quo in terms of what he was experiencing as the education system of the day was not just dehumanising for the teacher, for the student, but also he saw it as being dehumanising for the teacher.
Yeah.
This kind of...
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things, if I was to... speak about that in relation to aspects of our current education system, and particularly, we're just out now, the Leaving Certificate results were out this week, and it's the extent to which the whole experience of memorisation, rote learning, some of the criticisms that would be levelled at our current system are dehumanising for both teachers and for young people. I've talked to teachers actually about their experiences of teaching within that kind of a system. And, when you talk to teachers about the way they would like to teach, it often tends to be quite different from the way they feel they can teach within the constraints of the particular system.
Mm-hmm.
So pedagogy of the oppressed has messages there for teachers,
mm-hmm.
and how very rigid mechanistic forms of education are dehumanising for both teachers and students mm-hmm. alike.
Can I ask, just to kind of slightly go off topic and kind of move more into kind of the practical side of like the way education was? You have been a teacher. I myself am on career break from being a teacher. And we know ourselves, not only, like, we have, I'm sure, great respect, I certainly do, for other teachers. You know,
Absolutely.
It's a difficult job at
yeah.
the best of times,
yeah.
you know. And but, you know, the system has very much stayed the same for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody who has been on the policy, had been involved in the policy side of things, maybe would understand a lot more about the structure and the setups and the politics that goes along with the governance of the education system. What are the obstacles that are in the way to changing it towards the educational model that Freire argued for, which does have this need to assert your own humanity, this holistic kind of
education? It's quite a challenging form of education because there's a level of openness that's required in it. So it's challenging for teachers to do that. It requires much more emphasis on putting it back to teachers and students themselves with what they're going to learn and the way that they're going to learn. So, and within a highly competitive, I mean, the biggest challenge that teachers and students face within our current education system is it's so competitive because the end point of it is entry into the higher education
system. So it's not just an education system we're looking at. Really, if we look at the much bigger picture, it's the link to the economic system.
100%.
That we're not just students in a school anymore. I'm not just a student doing my PhD. A lot of the time when we're in education, we're actually thinking about who we are, our identity as this economic actor.
Exactly.
In terms of the bigger Ireland. Where do I want to go to do my... my degree, or where do I want to go do a master's, or what company do I want to be part of? Actually, I spoke with Kathleen Lynch, was one of the last people I spoke with, and she said one of the marked changes of Ireland 50 years ago and today was that people were proud when their son or daughter became a nun or a priest, and today they're proud if their son or daughter is accepted by one of the big five companies, that there's this status. And I guess that's part of being part of a society, right?
It is, but it's also a value judgment that we make in terms of what we decide is of value and important within our education system.
And who decides that? Who decides? Who makes those?
Well, there's key power stakeholders within the education system. Teachers would be one group, but you also have the churches, you have patron bodies, you obviously have the Department of Education. So there's key stake, and it's an interesting issue in terms of students and whether students are actually considered to be key stakeholders. And I think it's I just brought along here today a publication that and a piece of research that I was involved with the Department of Children and Youth Affairs, and that was called "So How Is School Today?" And that came actually from the Dáil na n-Óg, which is the Young People's Participation Parliament that's hosted by the Department of Children and Youth Affairs, and their dissatisfaction over their experience of education in the second level system and the amount of emphasis that was being placed on
exams. So these young people came to you and said that we have an issue and we would like to further research it.
This was the topic that they wanted the executive of the Dáil na n-Óg to actually look at over a 2-year period.
And that's actually very interesting because I guess young people who are already involved in a group that is kind of has a little bit of power, I guess, within Dáil na n-Óg, you might think, then those students are comfortable or they have the privilege of being part of this group, but they actually acknowledge acknowledged that actually there was a much bigger problem within their own wider student
body. Absolutely. It was just a general level of frustration and dissatisfaction with their experience of education. And so it was a national survey that they did using Feroiga as a sample base around the country and sampled over 3,000 young people. And I think that's actually getting quite a bit of policy traction. And I think that's really important because it's the first time that we have a national survey of young people's views of their second level system and some of the critiques that they would make of it. But some of the positive things that they would say as well. But it just more links into seeing the voices of young people and people who are listening to this podcast and the value of that as feeding into policy developments in Irish education so that we hear how young people are experiencing it. And that becomes an important platform of change in addition to whatever the needs or preferences might be of teachers, parents, adults, actually, a lot of adult stakeholders who often can't see alternatives to the way we do things because that's the way they always have been done.
Yes, yes. And this, I mean, I don't know whether you remember, you probably didn't see me at it, but you spoke at a, you just put your hand up and spoke. Somebody else was giving a talk at Geary recently, Geary Institute here at UCD. And it was discussion about young people and voice. And you said that actually across the board, Ireland is changing in terms of how we try to engage young people. Like, for example, the care system or the legal system, that we have started to acknowledge as a society the importance of granting that voice.
Absolutely.
Not just granting the voice for the young person, but the importance for wider society to hear that voice.
Yeah.
So we are kind of starting to...
I think there's some really positive initiatives. Now, I have the privilege of being, for example, on the National Children's Advisory Council. I'm very familiar with some of the really positive work that the Department of Children and Youth Affairs have been trying to do to really foreground issues around children and young people's voice in policy developments in Ireland. There's a whole policy platform that's been developed around trying to integrate the services that are provided across government departments for children and young people and trying to put more attention on is what the government is doing across all areas of work, not just the education system, hitting and targeting children and young people in a way that's meaningful for them.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of really progressive developments there. Some of that actually has its origins in the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child back as far as 1990 and comes actually from very strong criticisms by the UN committee that Ireland wasn't actually satisfying its obligations under that convention. So there has been a huge amount of activity. The extent to which it percolates back to children and young people in terms of how they experience their everyday lives is a question. But if we're linking it back to Freire, the principles around, for me anyway, how does that feed into education? How does that feed into how children and young people actually experience education and the extent to which education prepares them for a critical consciousness? I think that's hugely, hugely important. And all the more so, even beyond Freire's time, when we see all the concerns that are there today around fake news, the prevalence of social media in young people's lives, young people need to be equipped with the skills to critically reflect on all aspects of their lives in order to be able to make judgments for themselves about the stream of information that's coming at them and the extent to which they can filter and sort that.
Yes, and young people can be quite vulnerable to a lot of quite negative press and can be, I guess, you know, to have a really good, I mean, I think this course, Politics and Society, is
important.
A great opportunity for young people, and actually the key thinkers are from all different spectrums, all different backgrounds, all different persuasions in terms of right wing and left wing and various different, more conservative as well, you know. So it's interesting for students then to have a nice discussion around that. But you know, to have the opportunity.
And I think actually my sense is that there is a huge interest by young people in this subject, politics and society. And I think that contradicts perceptions that young people don't care. I mean, if we want to have and this was a core point of Freire, if you want to have an engaged citizenry, then you actually need to, you can't expect people to become engaged without actually having brought them through the process of critical reflection. And again, that links in not only to the role of education for citizenship, which is one of the things I'm also really, really interested in, and that idea of children, young people as citizens. They may not actually have the right to vote until they're 18, which can be questioned. But actually there's a form of citizenship that people can enjoy just by virtue of the fact of being members of the society, mm-hmm. which is around value, around respect, and around hearing their voices. Mm-hmm. And again, Freire was making connections between those core ideas and the kind of society that we live in. So just one other quote, you know, he talks about democracy, and he says, before democracy becomes a political form, democracy must be a way of life. Mm-hmm. So a core question and challenge by Freire that links into pedagogy and our discussion mm-hmm. around it is, are schools democracies? Do children and young people experience the school system and the relationship with teachers, with their peers, as a form of democracy? Because when you live and experience democracy, then you practice democracy. And democracy is hard work. Mm-hmm. you know, it's not an easy thing. The dialogical method, that teacher-student relationship, it's challenging.
Yes.
So when you encourage people to voice their opinions, what do you do with that?
Yes. Have you heard of Sudbury Schools?
Sudbury Schools. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not familiar.
So Sudbury Schools is a democratic form of education. Mm. And I believe that there is one in Wicklow, and there's just recently one started in Sligo as well. And
yeah.
the entire basis of the curriculum is that it should all be democratic.
Mm-hmm.
So you come in at any time between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
There are no such things as teachers, there are volunteers that work within the school, very much in the Freirean
right.
style,
yeah.
where they it's all dialogue
mm-hmm.
between the
mm-hmm.
facilitators
mm-hmm.
and the students,
mm-hmm.
and they come up with the curriculum themselves as such, you know,
mm-hmm.
they choose from a variety of things and learn at their own pace as such.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I spoke to a few of my
right.
fellow teachers about this.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, like it would be a very, very difficult thing to pull off, you know, I think
at
on
a
much
level.
Larger
yeah.
scale, you
mm.
know. Of course, it's the ideal. It's the absolute ideal, you know.
Mm.
It's idyllic, you
mm.
know, to think that you could sit in the classroom with your student and discuss back and forth. But it would take a huge, long and slow revolution to have the entire, say,
mm.
of the Irish education system looking like that.
It would. And I mean, what you'll find in a school like that is you've got very committed parents who are already very informed and critically reflective about education,
mm-hmm.
what they expect of education, that in itself supports the work that the school is doing. And actually one of the challenges that's often there within education is some sort of discontinuity or, you know, disjuncture between actually what the school is trying to do with students and what the parents, what's happening at home. For children at home.
Yes, yes. So maybe if a parent had a bad experience or a negative experience of education themselves, they might pass on their
Absolutely.
Experience to
yeah.
their students, or indeed in them talking on behalf of their students at parent-teacher
mm.
meetings, whatever, they might, you know, kind of not be able to kind
be
of...
Be very fearful.
Yes.
I mean, let's go
yeah.
back to Freire again. Freire mm. was working with peasants. Peasants who didn't see education as anything to do with them. Peasants who, if they had an experience of education, may have had a very negative experience of education. So the dialogical method is all around actually breaking those barriers, bringing parents. You know, the dialogical
mm-hmm.
method applies to parents
but
as well.
But he also pointed out that people are often afraid of freedom.
Mm.
You know, like...
Yeah, because freedom carries responsibility.
Mm-hmm. And freedom is not easily won. You
no.
have to fight, and it has to be a consistent battle to maintain
yeah.
your freedom.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult
yeah.
to kind of go out there and fight for that freedom, I suppose.
It is, and I think it would also be a mistake to assume that freedom means that you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Freire does talk about that as well in terms of his perception of education, that he's not saying that it's a free-for-all and a laissez-faire, that anybody can do what they want, but it's a form of, in many ways, I could look at it now as a form of guided discovery. He talks about teachers as lamplighters, that teachers are there to illuminate the possibilities for the student. So it's not that teachers won't, for example, have some idea of where they're trying to bring the students to, but it's around a constant questioning and dialogue over where are we at now, what do we understand, is this making sense, what do we value? And that's the essence of the dialogical method and what Freire was talking about. And that's the essence of conscientization, which
mm-hmm.
he talks about, which is making you, or bringing you to a sense of personal responsibility and ownership for who you are and what you want to become.
Very good. And so he talks about, you know, education for fairy is a praxis. It's action, it's practice. But also he talks about serious reflection, the importance, if you're going to be a critical, conscientious person, is that action alone can't, it can't just be action alone. You have to have this reflective process.
We do. And it has to, but the, I would see that as values being the cornerstone of what we do. So that's the praxis. It's the intersection between theory and action. And for Freire, it was around why are we doing what we're doing? You know, where is it that we're trying to get to? So that's why it, you know, it links into what we were saying there about freedom. You know, freedom for what? Freedom towards what? We can say the current neoliberal market economy emphasizes usually freedom and freedom to consume. So is that what we want? Is that all? Is that what we want from education? That it's actually about the freedom to take whatever it is you want out of education, to get whatever it is you want out of it, so you can use it for yourself to better your life. And Freire was saying, actually, it's about much more than that. It's around what kind of a society do we want to create? How can we as a community of learners, empowered by our interaction with one another, and with the teacher, who will have some knowledge and understanding and will help us and illuminate and facilitate that reflection on our parts to bring us to a better kind of society. That's what he wanted for Brazil.
Just funny, you brought up about voting and young people voting there recently. And, you know, originally Freire studied law. He originally wanted to become a lawyer, I suppose, and with the intent of looking at social injustice. But then he became a teacher, and then he became the director of the Department of Education in his state. But he worked primarily with illiterate poor, and the issue around that he was so focused on was that literacy was a requirement for voting in presidential elections at the time. So that keeping a huge amount of the population illiterate, I guess, kind of served somebody's purpose. Or could potentially serve somebody. It definitely had an impact on democracy if there was a large section of the population, particularly a very poor section of the population, that weren't a powerless section of the population, that weren't entitled to vote. And young people obviously aren't entitled to vote, and that must have, in Ireland until the age of 18, that must have an impact on how they see themselves, right? But do you think young people see themselves as powerless? Or... because that would be an important part of Freire's theory, right? That you'd have to see yourself as powerless. First, you have to be accept that you're oppressed. You'd have to accept that you...
Well, no, because I think that's actually... And Freire was obviously influenced a lot by Marx. So Marx talks about false consciousness. So it's not necessarily that people will see themselves oppressed, but they may not have that capacity to observe where they're at relative to where they could be. And that's a really core element of critical consciousness. It's around bringing people to a level of awareness, actually, of where they are located within the society, facilitating them to have the skills to critique and reflect on that, and then to make a judgment call about what they want to do with that knowledge and understanding. I mean, false consciousness is a really core concept, which is really around... I suppose, preventing people or people just not having the skills to be able to connect what their experiences are to the wider system, and instead, wherever they're at, to attribute it completely to their own personal failings or whatever. So if we look again at the peasants that Freire would have talked about, you know, there are generally people who are at the margins within society or who are experiencing poverty or deprivation or whatever. As a sociologist, I would say there's very structural basis for that within society. But the narrative around it is, well, you are responsible for yourself. So if you're poor, it's your fault. What did you do wrong? What did your family do wrong? So critical consciousness and conscientization is around actually looking through the layers of that and trying to broaden the perspective to see yourself as having been influenced by a process of experiences and structures within the society. So education is really important for that. So sometimes there can be resistance by powerful groups to having that level of criticality among young people, because it will
might
be
dangerous
for change.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
do you think Ireland is
changing?
Has Ireland, I mean, do you think Freire's teachings and theories have impacted Irish education? Do you think they're
not
still
sufficiently.
Do you think they're relevant and there's
hugely.
Hope for them to
absolutely hugely yeah. relevant. I mean, I found it really refreshing actually, just when I was considering you know, this podcast, to look back at the work of Freire and bring myself back, because it's been quite a time since I'd engaged directly with him. And I think actually his work has even more relevance today than it ever did.
And who are the people to take up the cudgel on this? Who can create change?
I actually think, I have huge faith actually in teachers, and I wouldn't be involved in education if I didn't actually believe in the power of education. And I can say that, having made a lot of criticism of some of the things that we do in education. But to critique something isn't to negate it. It's actually, I come from a place actually of still fundamentally believing in the positive value of education. And I think curriculum reform is hugely important. The introduction of a subject like politics and society is long overdue. You know, there are real questions about why did it take so long, and what would be the resistance to having those kind of subjects in the curriculum. Which is all to do with what kind of an education system do we want. We constantly have to be revising the curriculum to make sure it's fit for purpose for the 21st century Ireland. But that fit for purpose can't only be about making sure that we have the skills to work in new kinds of industries and new areas of work. That's really important. But it also has
there
to be...
There is a social responsibility almost that comes with education. I know myself, speaking as a teacher, that you can often feel, and I guess this is something that people would talk about in the staff room, or even when you're going through teacher training, you know, that, you know, you like, you're not a social worker as such, but you are essentially, if you're working with any people on a large scale, you have to also remember that people are bringing in their issues, whether they're economic issues or their mental health issues or whatever else. If you're dealing with a large group of people, you're going to have to be aware that there's going to be problems with that group. And how do you acknowledge what's going on there and try to facilitate that, but at the same time, all of those things that you spoke about, the curriculum, the exams,
assessment.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know,
we need to change our assessment system. I mean, that is one of the things that probably was most clearly picked up on by policymakers about that report that was commissioned by the young people themselves. So how was school today? Is we need to change our examination system so it is more conducive to encouraging this dialogical method of learning, and frees actually up teachers and students to learn in a way that's much more interactive.
Do you think we should be looking at various other forms of education, like the Steiner School
yeah.
or the Montessori School?
Yeah.
I actually have a friend who attended the Steiner School in New York. He got a scholarship to go there, and he attended secondary school there. And it was a very, very small class for a start. I think it was only one class per year. But he said that they would spend a month on one particular topic. So it could be like architecture of New York. And that was what they would just focus, they would completely immerse themselves.
Yeah.
And that it was very much like they would go off and do their own research, and they would swap stuff, and they would give little presentations within the class. And that it was all very...
But I think,
you know,
I think we have a much stronger emphasis on active learning in the newer curricula that are coming on stream. The problem is that the examination system, as long as it continues to do the traditional paper and pencil test... and terminal examination
is overshadowed.
That's going to actually undermine the efforts that teachers and the policymakers are making to try and have more group work, more active learning strategies in second level schools. I mean, a lot of my work has been around primary school system, and that completely transformed when they abolished the primary certificate at the end of the 1960s.
How did it transform? What were the visible changes?
It freed up teachers to actually take responsibility for the ways in which they were teaching their students, and it took away the emphasis on product at the end and a finite score at the end of your primary. There was a primary school certificate that determined actually that was, you know, what determined your entry into second level or what job you were going to take, because at that time, at the end of the 1960s, not everybody went on to second level schooling. But it freed it up, and a whole new curriculum was introduced in primary schools from the 1970s that was called a child-centred curriculum. That's classic Freirean in terms of its concept, because it's focusing on the child, it's focusing on the student. And, you know, it's in a way, it's a reflection of lack of change in aspects of our education system, where we are only moving towards that kind of a system in our second level system, mm-hmm. With some exceptions. But there are real attempts by policymakers to change it through curriculum and assessment. But you will not have fundamental reform mm-hmm. in students' experience of education unless you actually change the way they're mm-hmm. assessed. Because teachers feel they're working against the interests of their students yes. if they don't prepare
them
for the
exams. That's the awkward situation that the teachers are in.
They're
and often, a lot of the time, that exact thing that Freire speaks of, that dehumanising,
yeah.
you know, experience that teachers also
yeah.
feel, you know, that
yeah.
they would love to be, especially I'm an art teacher, you know, there's so much, I mean, giving somebody a grade on something that they put
That's
their heart
so
and soul into at the
yeah.
end just seems
yeah.
wrong in so many ways.
It's an art, of course, mm. is such, I mean, mm. active learning is, mm, is mm, central mm. to it, you know, so it's a really good example.
Yes.
But that beauty
mm-hmm.
and that creativity that's in
mm-hmm.
art is actually something that should be reflected in every subject.
Yes,
and
yes.
For Freire, pedagogy of the oppressed, that dialogical method is about creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm saying about it doesn't work in the interests of teachers either when
mm-hmm.
they are very constrained by a more narrow kind
mm-hmm.
of a system, because it constrains their creativity. And that's not to say
mm-hmm.
that there isn't wonderful work
mm-hmm.
going on about by
yes.
teachers.
Can I ask you a question, a little bit off on a tangent, but as an Irish woman, as
mm.
a mum...
Yes,
as
a mum of three sons.
Three sons,
mm-hmm.
who has worked within the education
yes,
system and understands somewhat, obviously, what the structure
yes.
is about and the
yes.
obstacles that go with that.
Yes.
If you could pick a list of three or five things, maybe, that you would like your children to come out of school having found out about themselves.
Mm.
Not necessarily they've got an A in geography or a B
mm.
in honours maths, or they've
mm.
done this or that, they've achieved this in the Young Scientist or anything like that. What would you like them to come out of school with a sense of about themselves?
What I most would have wanted for them is a belief in themselves and a belief in what
self-assuredness
they,
or
self-assured, just confidence in themselves and who they are as people.
Yes.
And I have always put actually a value on the capacity to critically reflect on what they're doing and why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that they
to be able to answer to yourself
that.
And you know understand why you have
it can make
acted.
For difficult conversations
yes.
around the dinner table
mm-hmm.
and it's challenging but
mm-hmm.
that's exactly what you want
mm-hmm.
you know. And something else that I really emphasized for them was that they would be good readers.
Yes.
And that's
mm-hmm.
because, and it links in actually to the literacy, when I say good readers I mean actually that they loved reading.
Yes.
And that they read for pleasure. So you know, to me, that's what you want to, that if you can, at the end of your experience of the education system, have a love for learning and that you are affirmed in yourself in that love for learning and feel empowered and able to take on the world and to communicate your reality
mm-hmm.
in a respectful way, in an engaged way
mm-hmm.
with others.
And that's all of these things, because I feel like, you know, my mirror, everything that you've just said exactly,
mm.
you know, I don't have children of my own, but if I did, I
mm.
certainly for my own students, those
mm.
are the things that I would really
mm.
like for them to have as they leave school.
Mm.
Those are, and I think, to be honest, any teacher who's in a graduation ceremony with their students, those
the
are
pride.
The things you're
they
wishing
do.
For all
yeah.
of your students, you know. Those things aren't curriculum things,
mm.
right? You know?
Yeah, but it's funny, Gráinne, because, I mean, you talked there about teachers aren't social workers.
Mm.
But actually, the essence of pedagogy is relationship.
Yes.
And the longer I've worked in education, the more convinced of that I have become. It is about relationship. It is about the relationship that develops between the teacher and the student.
Mm-hmm.
And all our theories of learning actually are increasingly founded on that idea that when you have positive, respectful, dialogical relationships with those you're working with, you will actually move forward. You will actually, it becomes a learning environment, it becomes a learning organisation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether you want to classify that as social work, because having a relationship with somebody means that you are empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
That you can actually understand where that person is coming from. It's a challenge. It's a challenge for you to understand where that person is
mm-hmm.
coming from, so you can see the world through their eyes and then you can learn to meet them and bring them on.
So just as Freire said, teachers have as much to learn from the students that they're
yeah.
spending their day
yeah.
with.
And And when you see teachers with their students, when you see the pride that they have in their students' achievements, that's the essence to me of good teaching.
A positive relationship.
Yeah. And it's why teachers love their job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a wonderful privilege to be a teacher. And there's a fantastic energy and vitality that teachers get actually primarily from the relationships that they have with their students and seeing their students be the best that they can be.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes so dehumanizing for both the teachers and the students when they're in environments where the students aren't being sufficiently supported,
mm-hmm.
where the teachers aren't being sufficiently supported. And it can get into just a negative feedback loop where it all becomes about the management of behaviour,
yes.
rather than the essence of learning.
Yes.
And that's what Frary was yes. talking about.
Professor Devine, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for giving up your time this afternoon to speak with us here on the UCD Sociology Podcast. Just to leave on a final note, do you have any advice for any young, budding sociologists or educationalists out there who might like to get into this field?
What I always advise, what I say to my students, what I've said to my own children, is follow your passion. Because that's what I've actually done in my life. I followed my passion for education, not knowing where it actually was going to take me, and it's taken me here. It's a very privileged position to be in. So I would say follow your passion. If there's something that sparks an interest in you, in your learning, in school, and for students who are listening to this podcast, and it's a subject that they love, follow it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you so much for your time. Very much appreciated.
Thank you.